Okay, so I'm going to switch to the other end of the age spectrum and present some results that relate to our primary and secondary hypotheses for our LA Sprout study, which built school gardens and provided an associated educational program for elementary school-aged children in Los Angeles. And the title of my talk is going to be Changing the Urban Food Landscape, School Gardens as Instruments for Improved Health Outcomes. And I have no relationships to disclose. Okay, so to set the stage for the research question, as well as tie this to the topic of our session, I wanted to introduce the concept of community-level geographies. And so on one hand, we have the built environment, which we know is the man-made material, spatial, and cultural products of human labor for living, working, and playing. On the other hand, we have other environmental aspects that contribute to the quality of a community. So for example, neighborhood socioeconomic status, social capital or resources, as well as perceptions of safety. And this really brings up the question, what is a healthy community? And this is a definition that the CDC has put forth, that a healthy community is one that both continuously creates and improves its physical and social environments, helping people to support one another in aspects of daily life and to develop to their fullest potential. Okay, so why is this important to public health? So this is really the premise of the work that we're going to be looking at today, and this is that how neighborhoods and cities are created can affect the physical and mental health of residents, both in positive and negative ways. So recently, we've become more aware of the concept of a food desert. So this is a neighborhood geography that we're going to talk about. And we think of it as a neighborhood where affordable, fresh, and nutritious food is difficult to obtain. So typically, a food desert is really more characterized by neighborhoods where fast food restaurants and convenience stores dominate. So most folks who've driven through a food desert will know how to recognize one. So the point of a food desert is that the limited access to healthy food options presents a challenge to families to maintain their health and the health of their children. So specifically related to food deserts is one individual health outcome, so childhood obesity. So even though there's been some data in recent years to suggest that the rates of childhood obesity may have leveled off, since the 1980s, the prevalence of childhood obesity has almost tripled. And if you look at the numbers today, it's concerning. About a third of children and adolescents aged 2 through 19 are either overweight or obese. And that includes 12.5 million who are obese, or 17% of kids aged 2 through 19. So we know a lot about what causes obesity, and in some ways we can think of it as an equation between inputs and outputs. So on one hand we have the quality and the quantity of what we eat, so excessive caloric intake. On the other side there's the lack of physical activity or our sedentary lifestyles. But there's other factors that contribute to obesity, like socioeconomic status, as well as limited access to parks and open spaces. So if you think about a family who's living in a food desert community, they are going to have a lot fewer options, a lot lower access to healthy foods than an equivalent family living in a non-food desert neighborhood. Okay, so why should we be concerned about childhood obesity? Well, there's a number of consequences, and I think of them both sort of more distally and more proximally. So for health risks now, so we know that childhood obesity is associated with risk factors for cardiovascular disease, like high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Also, kids who are obese have an increased risk of type 2 diabetes. There's also breathing problems like sleep apnea and joint problems. And then also what shouldn't be underestimated is the psychological and social problems that can be associated with childhood obesity. Later in life, we know that obese children are more likely to become obese adults, and adult obesity is itself associated with a number of serious health conditions. And there has been data that has suggested that if children are overweight, the obesity in adulthood that they experience is more likely to be severe. We also know that there are significant racial and ethnic disparities in obesity. And data from the years 2007 and 2008 suggests that Hispanic boys are more likely to be obese than non-Hispanic white boys. And non-Hispanic black girls are more likely to be obese than non-Hispanic white girls. Okay, so I'm going to talk now about our LA Sprouts project. And this was a school garden-based randomized control nutrition, cooking, and gardening intervention. And as I mentioned, this project built school gardens. So in a sense, we can think of it as an environmental intervention. And we measured a number of health outcomes in kids. So there's our individual level factors. Okay, so why gardening? So gardening provides access to fresh and tasty produce at a low cost. So this is especially important for families living in food desert communities. Also, we have data that suggests that teaching children about the origins of food may make them more aware of healthy food choices. Also, gardening is appropriate for all ages, races, ethnicities, and socioeconomic classes. Gardening programs in schools can increase exposure to fruits and vegetables. There's been studies that have suggested that they increase preference, motivation, and self-efficacy, and increase the intake of fruits and vegetables themselves. And then from our pilot study, we found that gardening interventions can actually have an effect on decreasing obesity and blood pressure. And I'm going to talk more about that. Okay, so the importance of fruit and vegetable intake. So if you look at the statistics, it's actually very disappointing that only about 1% of U.S. children meet recommendations for fruit and vegetable intake. Vegetable intake is associated with decreased adiposity and risk for diabetes in Latino youth. And in adults, fruit and vegetable consumption is linked to a number of decreased health outcomes, including the metabolic syndrome, cancer risk and mortality, and heart disease. Okay, so the research objective of our project was to determine the impact of LA Sprouts on dietary intake, obesity parameters, metabolic disease risk, and diet-related behaviors among low-income, primarily Hispanic, Latino, third and fifth grade students in Los Angeles. So this was a study that was conducted during the years 2012 through 2014, so we just wrapped it up this spring. It was a randomized controlled trial. We had two schools that were randomized to the intervention or receiving the LA Sprout study program, and two control schools who received the intervention after they provided their data as controls. We installed gardens at schools in food desert neighborhoods, so this was predominantly in the northeast Los Angeles area. The schools, by design, we selected them to have greater than 75% of the student body of Latino heritage, and greater than 75% of the student body being eligible for the reduced or free lunch program. We developed a culturally tailored curriculum, and we partnered with an existing after-school program to teach our program during after-school hours to third through fifth grade students. We also offered bi-monthly family workshops, and we collected a number of pre- and post-intervention measures on both our intervention kids and our controls. So a little bit about the rationale. So we and others had found that total sugar is a prominent source of risk of dietary metabolic risk in Latino youth. So this was a particular focus of our curriculum on reducing total sugar. And also we based our theoretical framework on the work of Bandura and social psychologists. The concept of self-efficacy. So by building self-confidence of kids' abilities to master tasks, the idea is that children will then engage in positive behaviors outside of that context. So there have been a number of previous garden-based studies that have been conducted, but I want to point out that they have not been experimental, and they have largely looked at the effect of those programs on dietary intake and more the behavioral outcomes like attitudes and preferences. And they had not to date included measures of obesity or metabolic parameters. So I'm going to show you just a few photos. This is one of the schools that we worked with, Monta Vista Elementary, and these are some of the before and during the garden was constructed. This is Monta Vista later. Loretto Elementary, Euclid, and Sierra Park. So our curriculum, again, was a 12-week program. We had we worked with the kids 90 minutes per week at each grade level. So we had half gardening and half nutrition, 45 minutes of gardening, where we took kids from seed to harvest. We emphasized environmental stewardship, and we based a lot of our lessons on existing tested curriculum. We had 45 minutes of nutrition, which we had also developed from other evidence-based nutrition studies, again, some of our work that we had done focusing on decreasing intake of sugar-sweetened beverages and processed foods, and increasing fruit and vegetable intake as a way of increasing dietary fiber. All the kids were involved in preparing the snack, and we had a family-style meal, so kids could enjoy the snack that they made, which included sitting down while they were eating. And every lesson, both good gardening and cooking, included hands-on activities, again, to get at this mastery of skills from week to week. So these are just some of our lessons. So this was a lesson that we did about vegetables. And here was an accompanying recipe. We made vegetable quesadillas in our outdoor kitchen. We had a lesson about fiber, which contrasted the fiber content in a whole fruit versus fruit juice. And this was the accompanying recipe of fruit rainbows, which is very popular. And I was skeptical that the non-fat plain yogurt would be eaten, but it was a big hit. This was one of our gardening lessons. So this was planning the garden. And this was an exercise in seed saving. And a lesson in recycling and reusing, repurposing. Okay, so I mentioned that we collected a lot of data, both pre and post, on both our intervention and control subjects. So this included a number of clinical measures, dietary intake, and questionnaire data to look at some of our more behavioral factors. And we used repeated measures, ANOVA, to assess whether the differences over the course of, whether there were differences in the change measures in these, in all of these different clinical, dietary, and behavioral variables between our intervention subjects and controls after the 12 weeks. Okay, so just to orient you a little bit to this table, so we had 173 intervention kids and 147 controls who we had complete pre and post data on, who were included in our analysis. This was a largely Hispanic Latino population by design. And I wanted to point out what I have highlight here in yellow is that our percent of children fitting the criteria for being overweight was over 50%, which is much greater than the national average. And for the other factors that we looked at, there were really no differences between our intervention and control subjects, with the exception of English spoken at home, which was borderline different between the two groups. Okay, so I'm going to start to show some of our results. So this was change in BMI, again, from pre to post. So we found that compared to our controls, our LA Sprout subjects had significantly decreased BMI Z-scores after the 12-week intervention. And this was change in waist circumference. So similarly, compared to control subjects who did not have any change in their waist circumference, LA Sprouts participants had a decrease in their waist circumference. So even though we had just a small number of both LA Sprouts participants and controls who fit the definition of the metabolic syndrome, there were fewer LA Sprouts participants after the intervention who fit the criteria for the metabolic syndrome than before, whereas the number of controls with the metabolic syndrome increased. We didn't observe significant changes in body fat or blood pressure or our blood measures. However, there was a much smaller sample size in the kids who agreed to provide a blood sample. As far as change in dietary intake, so we looked at a number of different intakes, and I'm just showing here what we found to be different. So after the intervention, we found that our LA Sprouts participants had increases in dietary fiber, whole grains, and specifically green beans and peas. And their intake of vegetables, while it decreased slightly, the decrease was much greater in controls. And then in terms of our dietary related behaviors, so we found that LA Sprouts participants had increases in their vegetable identification, their ability to identify vegetables, their nutrition and gardening knowledge, their self-efficacy to eat vegetables, that was part of our hypothesis, and then the numbers who were gardening at home. We didn't find an effect on motivation to cook or garden, which was contrary to our hypothesis, so that's something that we're continuing to investigate. Okay, so in summary, our LA Sprouts study, our program, resulted in reductions in BMI and waist circumference. We observed increased consumption of dietary fiber, whole grains, and some specific vegetables, green beans and peas. We also found that it was associated with improved vegetable identification, nutrition and gardening knowledge, and self-efficacy to eat vegetables, and also an increased percentage of children gardening at home. Okay, so in conclusion, teaching children to grow, cook, and eat fruits and vegetables can improve multiple health outcomes. We definitely need longer-term studies, specifically randomized controlled trials, to understand the long-term effects of health outcomes as well as to evaluate sustainability. So the differences that we observed over our 12 weeks were small, but we do take this into consideration that it was just a 12-week program. So we imagine that if this study could be extended to a longer period of time, we might actually be able to observe greater change. And then also school gardens can increase access to fruits and vegetables in otherwise food desert neighborhoods. And then I just wanted to acknowledge there was a lot of people who worked on this project. My co-investigator, Jamie Davis, who's now at the University of Texas, as well as investigators at USC. The schools who participated, we had a lot of undergraduate students who helped LAUSD. And then also we received funding from the National Institutes of Health and three private foundations to support.